So we're still working our way through the Nishmas Avram's introduction to Orach Chaim Shin Chav Ches. We're going to be in this for a long time. It's a rather long introduction. But we're on the page that has at the top Shin Tzadi Ches. It's the first page of the Nishmas Avram document that I sent. And you want, in the second column, the number 7. That's what we're up to. And he's going to discuss use of elevators in a hospital on Shabbos. He's going to talk about 3 different elevator situations. Number 1, using a Shabbos elevator, which he's going to define. Number 2, using a regular elevator. And number 3, using an elevator where there's a non-Jew who's actually operating the elevator. Those are the 3 cases. So I thought, in order to introduce this, we should first understand what the issues are that we're talking about when we deal with elevators on Shabbos. And once we do that, then we can go into what he has to say. In general, the Nishmas Avram is going to come across as very lenient. We're not dealing with the obvious challenges of, can you push a button? No, you don't push a button. Yes, if you have somebody who's dangerously ill and needs to get to their floor, then you do push a button. But as a general principle, we don't want to push buttons. We don't want to break an electric I-beam to make a door open, you know, that was closing. But just to talk about some of the subtler issues that come up. One is the issue of descending in an elevator, and the other is the issue of going up in an elevator, having nothing to do with how the elevator was summoned, having nothing to do with how the door was opened and closed. That's not the discussion. So some of you were there. I've given, you know, shiurim on Shabbos elevators, so some of you may have been there. The first four sources on the sheet have Hebrew and English because I took it off of the source sheets that I used when I gave shiur on Shabbos elevators. So when you're talking about descending in an elevator, the halachic concern is that your weight causes the elevator to move from floor to floor and therefore causes whatever malacha is going to happen when the elevator moves from floor to floor, such as changing the floor indicator. Even though you didn't do anything, you didn't push any buttons, it's your weight that is causing that change to happen. Well, is a person's weight ever a cause for liability? You didn't act. Is that really a concern? So take a look at source Aleph. There are many, many sources I could have brought for this. When I've given shiurim on this, it's usually been, you know, multiple hour-long sessions. We're not doing that. But just a brief sense of some of the issues that we're talking about. I'll put the link in the chat again for the materials. Okay. So source Aleph is the Gemara in Bava Kama Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. Va'amar Rabba. Rabba says, not dealing with Shabbos, but dealing with laws of damages. He says, Nafal Me'rosh HaGag Beruach She'ena Mitzuya. We've been having a very windy day here in New York. So there is an uncommonly strong wind, and somebody falls off of the roof, v'hizik, and he causes damage, ubiyesh, or he embarrasses somebody. Somehow he fell onto somebody and caused them some level of embarrassment. Chayav al hanezek, upatur be'arba devarim. So he's liable for the harm he causes, but he's exempt from the other 4 types of payment that are normally associated with harming somebody else, causing somebody to lose time from work, causing somebody embarrassment, causing somebody pain. That you're exempt from those things. I'm sorry, that's correct. You're exempt from those things. You're just liable for the damage that you caused, assuming it was an uncommon wind. The reason why you're liable for the damage you caused is because we have a principle, Adam Mu'ad La'olam. A person is always considered to be forewarned, and he should have taken special care. However, since he really couldn't have expected this to happen, he's exempt from the other types of payments for damages. The Gemara continues, Beruach Mitsuya, if it was a normal wind, v'hizik u'b'yesh, and he caused harm, he shamed somebody, Chayav barba devarim. Then he's liable for four out of the five types of liability: time lost from work, reduction in value, pain. Those things he's liable for. Medical bills he's liable for. But pater ala boshes, he's exempt from liability for embarrassment that he caused. The reason being that it was not intentional. So the reason why I bring this here is to say, here you have somebody, I see your hand, Brian. Here you have somebody who caused harm simply by falling, and he is going to be liable for it. It's his weight that caused it, and he is liable. Can you make the argument that your weight causes the elevator to go downward and malacha to happen? Now you will be liable. Yes, Dr. Schwartz.
Hi, it's actually his wife.
Oh, okay. The other Dr. Schwartz. Yes.
I'm just wondering, I always thought that that the person whose house it is or the building is responsible for putting a railing so no one does fall off.
Yes, that is true. They are supposed to put a railing to prevent people from falling off, assuming, you know, reaches the minimum height that we're talking about, which buildings tend to. Then yes, that is true. However, that does not exempt the person who falls off from liability. You always have to anticipate. Now, if you're going to tell me he is lying next to the wall and there was zero reason for him to anticipate that the wind was going to be strong enough to lift him up and over that, right? Then you're in the first case that we mentioned, the case of the wind that one would never have anticipated. So he's liable only just for the harm, the depreciation, not liable for any of the other things. So can I make the argument that just like you're liable for falling off of this building, so too you're liable if on Shabbos your weight causes the machine, the elevator, to go from floor to floor? The answer is not necessarily, because these aren't necessarily analogous. Right? Liability for damage that you caused to somebody stems from the fact that you were careless. To some extent, there was caution that could have been taken that you didn't take. But there's never an issue of intent. We don't say that a person who causes damage unintentionally is exempt from liability. You're only liable if it's intentional. Intention is not relevant when we're dealing with nezek, when we're dealing with damages like that. However, when it comes to Shabbos, you're liable for actions that you perform on Shabbos that are a malacha if you perform them with your own strength and with your own plan. Right, that's a cardinal principle in the laws of Shabbos. We call it Meleches Machshavos. You have to have intended to cause the harm. So therefore, the argument goes, you aren't really concerned about the effect of your weight on Shabbos. You follow? Taking that a step further, the Chazon Ish wrote, and I brought what he was quoting. He quoted the Ra'ah, Rabbi Aaron Alevi, found in the Shita Mekubetzes, which is what I quoted here in source base, to say you could be liable, not you, nobody here. A person could be liable for causing harm due to carelessness and yet not be liable for murder because his own force was not involved, and therefore certainly shouldn't be liable when it comes to the laws of Shabbos, which carries even more restrictive terms for liability. Let's see what we're talking about. Take a look at source base. This is the comment of Rav Aaron Halevi about a case in which the one caused harm via carelessness, but not via force. He says, "Nirali dehefresh ika ben chiyuv misa lechiyuv nizikin." He says there's a difference between liability for murder and liability for causing harm. Dibinizikin mechayev al garmaso kaven dahavi gire. When you're dealing with nizikin, when you're dealing with damages, you're liable for what you cause. It's your arrow, so to speak. Umisa lekalachayuve al garmaso. But when it comes to death, you're not liable for that which you cause. Afilo hecha dahavi gire. Even if it is your arrow, so to speak. Ela b'mazik begufo o b'kocho. unless you use your body, unless you use your actual force. So in other words, if you threw a stone up in the air, right, and it arced and it hit somebody, so it isn't that you threw the stone and, you know, into somebody and harmed them, but rather you threw it up in the air. What caused the stone as it arced to come down on somebody else's head is the force of gravity. So the person who throws the stone is going to be chayav, is going to be liable for damages if it causes harm, but is not going to be liable for having killed somebody. The point being for us that with Shabbos, there's even less of a liability in a situation like that. Because on Shabbos, we care about the effort that somebody expended. That's part of it. And if you're talking, again, to go back to our core question, holding somebody responsible just because of their weight, they didn't do anything. There was no effort. There was nothing. It's just that their weight caused the elevator to go down and therefore the indicators to light up. So the argument to be liable is your weight caused it and your weight can induce liability when you're dealing with damages, to which the argument is that's not analogous to the laws of Shabbos. And in fact, you can make an argument the other way when you talk about the laws of Shabbos, which is, you got in the elevator. Let's say we're talking Shabbos elevator. It's going from floor to floor with you or without you, okay, whether you get in or not. So if you don't get in, you're on the eighth floor. You're standing there observing the elevator. The elevator starts going down. It pauses on each floor and eventually it gets to the bottom. Let's say, I'm making everything up right now, but let's say it takes the elevator 5 minutes to get to the bottom. Okay? You're not on it. No one is on it, as a matter of fact. Change that. Now, you get on the elevator on the eighth floor. How long is it going to take to get to the bottom? The same 5 minutes. You didn't do anything in the sense that there was no impact from your presence. Take a look at source number three, please. I should say Gimel, because I did Aleph Bet Gimel. So source Gimel. Mishnah says, Kasav os achas samuch liksav. If you write, remember that for the laws of writing on Shabbos, you're liable if you write two letters. What if there was one letter already present and you wrote a letter next to it? Or, uksav agabe ksav. There was writing and you traced two letters. So you formed the letters on top of the form of letters that were already there. In both of those cases, the rule is, pater, you're exempt from liability. You're not liable in the first case because you didn't write two letters. You wrote one letter. You're not liable in the second case. Why not? You did write two letters. Why am I not liable?
You're not creating anything.
Meaning?
It's stay strong.
Yeah. Nothing was accomplished. You didn't do anything. You didn't achieve anything. So there's debate between two of the main rabbis in this discussion about elevators, Rabbi Yisrael Rosen and Rabbi Halperin. Those are the two big names in this discussion. They're both involved with Somet and various modern devices. And Rabbi Halperin argues, yeah, but you do increase the velocity with your weight. It may not get there faster, because if you weren't there, it would have done it itself. But you are increasing the velocity with your weight. Rabbi Rosen disagrees. Rabbi Rosen, in source Dalid, says, Be'ez ha-yirida, when the elevator is descending, ha'adam b'mishkalo mesiyeyam l'ma'alit, the person is helping the elevator descend with his weight, v'toreim l'aktanat ha'zerim b'manoa, he contributes to the reduction of the electrical flow that's in the motor, Hatana hisha adam shutaf b'horadat ha-ma'alit. And the argument for prohibiting is that you are a partner in causing the elevator to descend. Omnam gam biladav ha-ma'alit haita yoredet b'ota mo'ed u'ota mehirut. However, the elevator would descend at the same time, at the same speed, without you. And then he writes, Hevdel ha-mehirut hu afsi. He says, the difference in speed of the elevator, whether you are there or whether you are not there, he says, is so tiny as to be insignificant when you're talking about going from one floor to the next floor. Ulechol ayoter, shtei komot, maximum it's going two floors. Laorech, 2.5 to 5 meters. A distance of 2.5 to 5 meters is all it's going, and then it's going to stop and open for the next thing. He says there is no real impact from what you do. That's his argument when it comes to descending in the elevator. And Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach sides with Rav Rosen, saying you're not really having any significant impact when you cause the elevator to descend, as it was put. Again, there's a lot more to talk about in this topic, but just giving a brief introduction to it. What about going up in the elevator? Well, now the elevator weighs you and decides how much force to exert. It is going to exert more current in order to be able to lift you. So is that a problem? So Rabbi Yisrael Rosen thinks not. In the article in the journal Tchumen, in volume 5, and I brought you an excerpt here, he goes through the different possible prohibitions and possibilities for what's wrong with electricity on Shabbos, and he eliminates them one by one in terms of their application in our case. So he says, Mitzad Hagdalat Hazerem Atzmo, he says, as far as increasing the electricity, Mabakach, he says, so what? Shekein ein kan havara. You're not burning anything with this. Ve'ein b'chlal shum element chashmali hamitlabein. There is no metal element that is going to become white hot like in an incandescent light bulb. Ve'ein tosefet hev'er al yedei agbarat hazerem. You're not causing an added fire by increasing the flow of electricity. He says, there's no issue of havara. There's no issue of lighting a fire. What about the argument that maybe there's bona, there's construction involved when you complete a circuit? So he says, Mitzad Yisurei bona o makeh v'pati shenemru b'Shabbos, harei einam amurim kishirak mosif al hazerem v'ma'agal kvar banuy mushlam biladav. He says, it's not relevant here. It's like what we discussed when we talked about the monitor in the hospital, right? The monitor, the hospital bed, the IV. We said any time the thing is already a complete circuit, and it's therefore the electricity is already flowing, and all you are doing is causing that flow of electricity to increase, that's not considered a problem of construction. That is not considered a problem of makeh b'patish. Knock that out, he says. Gam mitzad ma shehirbu ha'achronim, on the third line, lidon b'chashmal mitzad molid zerem, as far as where the achronim say, okay, fine, but you are creating an electrical flow, this is a rabbinic concern. He says, "Ein hadvarim amurim b'hosafa al pi agmara beitza chav gimel abed aleph linyan holadas reyach." He says that doesn't apply where all you're doing is adding to existing current. If you are creating it from scratch, then you have a conversation about molid, creating something new. But it's not relevant where all you're doing is increasing existing current. And he references for you a gemara in beitza daf chav gimel abed aleph that talks about a person who has a cup with coals in it that they're burning nice smelling spices in it, and they want to scrape it along a garment in order to make the garment smell nice. So he says, when they discuss that in the Gemara, they say explicitly, Hasam Recha Meha Isa, Vosufa Huda Kamosif Recha. In a case that they're discussing where there is no liability, it's because the thing already has a smell and you're just adding to the smell. No liability, as opposed to where you're generating the smell from scratch. So he says, what we're talking about is just adding to the electrical flow. Molid is not an issue either. And then he goes on to say, don't worry about any sparks that come up either. Gmo kein tosefes of chasas nitzotzot chashmaliim b'manoa misug misuyam. He says the idea that you are either increasing or decreasing electrical sparks in the motor, ketotzaa mishinuyim bezerem, as a result of changing, you know, fluctuations in the current. Af eloi nam madigim b'china hichatit. He says they have no halachic significance. Ukvar danu b'sheilas hanitzotzot chashmali b'shabbos. It's already been discussed. The view that says sparks have no substance is the view that we accept. So therefore, we're not concerned about that either. And then he quotes the Chazon Ish, who says that that there's no issue for sparks as well. And then I'm going to jump, just because I don't want to spend the entire time on elevators. If you see six lines up from the bottom in source Hay, Hayusha Toanu, there were those who claimed ki ba'aliyah b'ma'alit automatit b'shabbat, that by going up in an automatic elevator on Shabbos, ha'adam goyim l'hagbarat ha'zerem, you cause an increase in the flow of electricity, uba'akifin mashpi'al hagbarat ha'yitzur b'tachanat ha'koach, ayidei srifat chomer delek v'yeshkan safek havara. He says electricity doesn't grow on trees. Right? How do they generate electricity? They have a power plant. And when he's writing in Tchumen Volume 5, which is like 40 years ago, it isn't a wind turbine. That's not what they're talking about. They have a plain old fuel plant. So maybe by drawing on more electricity in the elevator, I am causing them to feed more fuel into the power plant to generate electricity. Some, he says, have suggested that that's a problem. He says, Hine, five lines up from the bottom. Hine mitzad hametzius. He says, in reality, hashpa'at ma'alit achat hipachot mitipa bayam. He says, the impact of one elevator is less than a drop in the ocean or in the sea. Ve'en hashpa'atan ikeret klal b'chevrat hachashmal. There's nobody at the electric company who would be able to say, oh, you know, now we have to use more fuel because there's another elevator running in that building. That's just not a thing. Hashinei hu afsi. He says it is nil what you're adding. Upachot mikalush. It is less than weak. V'dome ki adam anichnas lebeit chaveiro mashpia b'chom gufo ala mekaresh b'bayit yoter me'ashpa'at ma'alit al chevrat hachashmal. He says you cause more impact on the refrigerator in somebody else's house by walking into their house than this elevator causes for what's going on in the power plant. He says that's not a consideration. He then quotes Rabbi Yeshua Neuvert in Shmir Shabbos Gilchas according to Shlomo Zalman Arbach, who says also there is no such consideration in this regard. So that's his position, and the Shmir Shabbos Gilchas in source Vav, we get a psak on it, and then we'll see what the Nishmas Avram does with our elevators. He says, Asur lihishtamesh b'ma'alit b'shabbat u'b'yom tov. You're not allowed to use an elevator on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Ela imkein, unless he po'elet ba'ofen otomati, unless it's operating automatically. Ma'alit Shabbat, a Shabbos elevator. Dahainu shi olavi oredet li'itim mezumanot, meaning it goes up and it goes down at preset times. Oh, Olavi already the low have sake, or it's just constantly going up and down. And it stops on floors as programmed before Shabbos. And the door closes and opens on its own. And you don't need to do anything. And entering the elevator doesn't cause malacha. And leaving the elevator doesn't cause malacha. You need all of these things to be satisfied. Aval, but you should know, gam b'malit otomatit zu, even with an elevator that's automatic like this, yesh machmirim shelo lihishtamesh bo ela ba'aliyah, some are strict, and they will not use it, only to go up. They're worried about the problem of descending. That they are concerned about. Why? Flip the page. Hashitot ha'osrot lishtamesh ma'alit shabbat letzerach yirida, those who don't like a descending elevator, mipnei shekasher yordim b'harbei anashim b'bat achat, is because when many people descend at once, Ki az gam hayirida atzma v'gam hadlakat hanurot shebechol atzira naaseit al yedei koach hayordim v'lo al yedei hachashmal. He says, the reason for concern in descending is that when you descend in the elevator, you have to worry that you are causing things to happen. You're causing lights to go on. There will be things that you generate. And further, he adds, separate point, I'm going to just say it outside, because otherwise, I mean, it's already 757. But he says, there are elevators in tall buildings, newer technology, where the elevator actually generates electricity as it goes downward, right? As it descends, the motor is spinning and it generates electricity, which is then recaptured and fed to the floors around the elevator. So you're actually causing lights to go on. You are causing the elevator to descend. That in turn is causing power to flow to lights, air conditioners, whatever it is. And therefore you'd have a concern. Other poskim, as he notes, do not agree this is a concern, but some people are indeed careful about that. That is a consideration for some. Okay. All right. I'm gonna hold the Shmir Shabbos there. Let's see the Nishmas Avram. So we are again on the Nishmas Avram page that says Shin Tzariches at the top, the second column, the number 7. Shimush b'malit Shabbat. First of all, he talks Shabbos elevators. Mutar la'alot v'laredet b'malit miyuchedet l'Shabbat hapo'elet ba'ofen otomati. He says you are allowed to go up and to go down in an elevator that is set for Shabbos, which works automatically, meaning you don't have to push any buttons. Ola v'yoredet li'itim mezumanot. It goes up, it goes down at set times. V'gam adelet niftachat v'nizkeret me'eleha, and the door opens and closes on its own. Mibli she'tzarach lasos b'kol pu'ula shehi, and you do not need to do anything. So he says, one would be allowed to use that on Shabbos. He did not clarify and say, specifically an ill person or an ill person of this level. He's good. He's fine. What about a regular elevator, not a Shabbos elevator? So he says, Mutar lahavir chole sheyesh bo sakana. This one you didn't need to tell me. I could have told you this one. He says, if you have a patient who's dangerously ill, you are allowed to transport the patient malit regila in a normal elevator mikoma lachaverta from one floor to another. Va'av habari mutar lelevoso b'malit. And he says, a person who's healthy is allowed to join him in the elevator. The reason being that this job is being done for the sake of the patient. You're just there to help take care of the patient. Umuvan, shigam yuchal lazmin et ha'malit b'lchitza al-kator. He says, you'd be allowed to summon the elevator by pushing the button too. Va'afilu im yudlak or yidei l'chitza so. And even if pushing the button is going to cause light to go on, that's fine. V'im efshar, if possible, yishtadel la'asos zos b'shinui. You should try to push the button in an unusual way. If it's not going to cost you anything, if you are going to be just as effective in taking care of the patient, so push the button in an unusual way. In parentheses says, begav hayad o gava etzba, the back of the hand or the back of a finger with a knuckle. Now, he wrote that years ago. COVID changed everything in terms of a shinoi in pushing an elevator button. Because even years after the pandemic, I still pass an elevator and I see people push it with their knuckle, almost without thinking. It's just the way they do it. I don't think you can say that pushing an elevator button with a knuckle counts as a shinoi anymore. I don't think that that's true. The criteria for shinoi, we're not doing a big shinoi discussion right now, but the criteria for shinoi is that it has to be either an inferior action, like an action you would choose not to do because it's harder to do, or an inferior result. It's going to be that it doesn't work as well. So it works just as well in terms of the result, which is to say your elevator is going to be summoned. And your step of pressing the elevator button, it's not harder to push an elevator button like this than it is like that. So I don't think that holds anymore. Clear? Okay. Last note on elevators, and then we move on to other things. Number 9, we're on the page that has Shin Tzaddites at the top. Malit mufelat ayde akum. What about an elevator operated by someone who isn't Jewish? Mutar la'avir chol hashem bo sakana b'malit hamufelat b'yde akum. He says, if you have a patient who is ill but not in danger, doesn't have to be in danger, they're just ill, then you're allowed to use an elevator that a non-Jew is operating, the non-Jew is pressing the button. Even if the non-Jew is actually going to activate the elevator for this patient, that's fine. Because the patient is a cholesh she'in bo sakana, and the rule with a cholesh she'in bo sakana, as we've discussed, is that you can ask a non-Jew to do malacha for you on Shabbos. So cholesh she'in bo sakana, remember, is the person who's bedridden, the person who whose whole body is ill. That's what we're talking about. He continues to say, umuvan, it's obvious, shemuter rak im ha'avara na'aseis l'shem bedika otipul b'chole. You're only allowed to do this if the reason you're transporting the patient is for tests or for treatment. V'lo k'dei sheyuchal la'agia le'beis ha'knesses shebe'beit ha'cholim. Not because he wants to go daven with the shul in the hospital chapel. That's not a justification. V'chein asur b'mikrezeh, and also in a circumstance like this, it would not be allowed le'yehudi la'hazmin et ha'ma'alit al-yedei l'chitza b'kaftor. You would not be allowed to push the button to summon the elevator if all you want to do is get to davening. Ela yivakesh me'akum la'azazos. You would ask a non-Jew to be the one to do it. V'shamati me'agon r'shlomo zalman orbach zatzal shemutu li'ishtamesh b'ma'alit kazot. He says, Rav Shlomo Zalman said, you are allowed to use such an elevator to go down, not only to go up. And that's what Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa writes in his name. There's a little reference there to a separate discussion that we're not going to go through right now about non-Jews and their involvement, but I'm not going there right now. So that ends the elevator discussion. Yeah, Robbie.
So, what if the person is critically ill and you have to take them up to wherever, then we should be able to press it ourselves. I thought you said not to ask a non-Jew because they may not think it's that urgent.
Right. So, if it's a life-threatening situation and if time might be of the essence, then don't ask a non-Jew. However, if it's a case where, no, it's, yes, this person needs this. However, whether they get it now or 15 minutes from now isn't going to make a difference. They need, you know, a scan done. But it's not like, you know, the question we ask perpetually is, how fast would they be if this were Tuesday? You know, that's really the question. So if there's any question of speed mattering, then no, do not, you know, go to a non-Jew. But if it's something where everybody knows it's just going to have to happen at some point, he's going to get up to the floor where they're doing the MRI or the CAT scan or whatever it is, and they're going to make him wait for an hour. So, you know, that's what you're working with.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now, numbers 10, 11, and 12 deal with a very interesting question. At least interesting to me. Hopefully interesting to you as well. We keep talking about the care you have to give a patient in terms of medical care, right? That's what we've been dealing with. However, there are other things you need to do in order to be able to save the life of a patient. So that may include, we talked about on other occasions, driving the patient to the hospital. That's not a medical act. It enables it. Everyone understands we need that. We need to get the patient to the place where they can take care of the patient. So we're good with that. We're good with making a phone call to get medical information, because that's what you need to do in order to be able to take care of the patient. But what about when the thing you need to do in order to get care is just a hospital protocol? You have to fill out papers. Are you allowed to do that? That's the question. So if you take a look at number 10 on the sheet, actually, one of the things we're going to see, I don't remember if it's in 10, 11, or 12, is a very interesting question which I gave you a couple of sources on because it's fascinating. All of us, I think, on this Zoom are English speakers and English writers. If I have to write on Shabbos, is there an advantage to writing in English as opposed to writing in Hebrew? So my instinct would be no, there's no difference. Writing is writing. Take a look on your sheet, though, at source Zion. I'm going to put the link in the chat again for the two sheets. Okay. Source Zion is a Mishnah in Shabbos. Mishnah says, Hakosev shtei osios. When you write two letters, right? We've said this. You're liable if you write two letters. If you write two letters, bein bimino, bein bismolo, whether you write with your right hand or your left, and what he means by that in the Mishnah, the Gemara explains, is whether it's a righty writing with their right hand, or whether it's a lefty writing with their left hand. Bein mi shem echad, bein mi shtei shemos. I'm not going into that right now. Bein mi shtei samanios, two different types of ink. Doesn't matter. Bechol lashon, that's the key. In any language, chayav, you're liable. So that seems to be very clear. Rashi on that Mishnah actually says, shakol ksavim, of any type of script, v'gufan shakol uma, or it should be probably gufin, shakol uma v'uma, any text, any font from any nation. The problem is, the Yerushalmi in source Ches, says, Mahu bechol lashon. What do you mean when you say in any language? Afilu aleph alpha. Even aleph, like the Hebrew letter aleph, and alpha, which is Greek. So some argue that that's only Hebrew and Greek. Remember that the Yerushalmi has very nice things to say, complimentary things to say about Greek. So maybe only Hebrew and Greek are considered true languages, and other languages are not. So the Or Zarua, who's an Ashkenazi Rishon, actually suggested that if you have to write on Shabbos, you're better off writing in a non-Hebrew language. This is not about Shinui. It doesn't matter that your native language is not Hebrew. That's okay. So take a look at source number Tess, where the Rama is going to bring this. The Shulchan Aruch is talking about a non-medical thing. The Gemara in Gittin talks about being justified in having a non-Jew write a legal document so that you are able to buy land in Israel on Shabbos. The opportunity comes up on Shabbos. If you wait, you could lose the opportunity. You could have a non-Jew write up the document because of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, because you want to fulfill the mitzvah of settling Israel. So take a look at the Shulchan Aruch in Tess. Mutter liknos bayis be'eretz Yisrael min ha'inu Yehudi b'Shabbos. You are allowed to purchase a house in Israel from a non-Jew on Shabbos. V'choseim umale be'erka'os. And you sign it and you bring the document up in non-Jewish courts. Says the Ramah, Haga, shelahem, in their courts. B'ksav shelahem, and you do it in their writing. De'eno aser rak midrabanan, because using their writing, meaning in the Ramah's case in Polish, using their writing is only rabbinically prohibited. Umishum yishuv eretz Yisrael lo gazru, and since it will result in settling the land of Israel, there's no rabbinic decree against doing it. So he says the problem is fundamentally a rabbinic one. Halachic authorities do not side with this idea of the Or Zarua, which the Ramah quotes. They do not try this at home. If you take a look at source Yud, the Mishnah Brura, he says, Ayin b'bir alacha, he's commenting on this idea of writing in a non-Hebrew language. He says, see the bir alacha, which is the expansion that the Mishnah Brura wrote. Shebi Arnu, we explained there, did das or zarua das yechida'ahi. The view of the Or Zarua, that writing in a language other than Hebrew is not as much of a violation, that's a lone view. Ve'en l'shum makom b'shas, it has no place in Gemara, v'chol ha'poskim cholkin al zeh, and all of the halachic authorities dispute this. They do not agree that this works. Similarly, the Aruch HaShulchan in source Yud Aleph, Uba'aga kasev b'siv zeh, he says, the Ramah wrote, Diksav shalahem eino aser ele midrabanan. That the non-Jewish alphabet, their writing, is only rabbinically prohibited. Ayin sham. U'mitzvah rabba lemochko min hasfarim. The Aruch HaShulchan says it will be a great mitzvah to erase that from the halacha books. Get that out of my Shulchan Aruch. He says that doesn't belong there. We should get rid of that. V'kama min apokrim taloi bazeh b'avonoseinu harabim. He says, you know what's happened? People who are pokrim, like Hefker, people who flout the law, have said, oh, see, that's my basis. I can write whatever I want, as long as it's not in Hebrew. He says, that's a terrible thing. Ve'en leze shum makom bedin. This has no place in halacha. V'chaz v'shalom lo markein. He says, God forbid to say such a thing. The truth is, Rav Avadya Yosef and Yabia Omer Gimel Chaf Gimel does bring sources that support the Ozeru's idea, but generally speaking, it's true that that's not something we follow. We generally would not do that. So now let's see what he does with this business. Now that we learned a little bit about writing in other languages, and is that a valid hat there, take a look at number 10. Okay, everyone has it? Tofes Haskama, a consent form. When you have a patient who's dangerously ill, who has to undergo an operation on Shabbos, the administration of the hospital says, we aren't doing the surgery unless he agrees in writing. You have to sign a consent form. And it's not sufficient for them, for him to verbally consent, even if it's in front of witnesses. So the rule is that the patient can sign, his family members can sign, even though this isn't a medical act, it's just protocol. And he says, the patient or a family member of the patient is allowed to sign if the doctor demands that before taking care of this dangerously ill person. Even if the doctor's desire for him to do this is purely for himself, it's not part of the medical thing at all. The doctor says, I want it. Obviously, assuming you can't convince him to forego the signature, you should try to get out of it. Umikomakom, however, four lines up from the bottom. Umikomakom, he says, yishtadel lachtom b'shinoi. Still, you sign it in an unusual way, kikon biyad simol, such as using your left hand. V'gam yishtadel lachtom b'kitzer, ad kama sheyuchal lema'et b'ksiva. You should also try to write as few letters as possible. They reduce the writing that you're doing. Kikon rashi tevos bilvad. Maybe you can just do your initials. And if it's possible, just make an identifying mark. Everybody knows that's me. That's good enough. He says, be careful. You're not allowed to sign on Shabbos in order just to save money. Meaning, you would be able to sign him out of the... I'm trying to imagine a case. Where would there be a case where you sign a consent form and get out of having to pay? I'm trying to imagine.
If you want to take the patient home a day early from a hospital, you have to pay a daily rate.
So they won't count it that you left the hospital unless you signed the paper saying that you're leaving. Yeah, that could be. Okay.
And why are you leaving on Shabbos? But that's a different question.
Right. Yeah, you're going to hang out in the lobby.
How about experimental therapy? If you were to sign and agree to experimental therapy treatments, evaluations, you're really not paying at that point.
So maybe that's a case. Okay.
Try.
Yeah. Thanks.
I wonder if you would sign out, you can't sign at AMA then.
Sorry?
In order to leave an emergency room, let's say you don't like how they're dealing with you, you have to sign a paper that says against medical advice.
Right. Well, we're going to see discharge in number 12. So maybe that impacts that. But he finishes this thought by saying something that's a good piece of news in Israel anyway. Because of Leah Rav, Dr. Halperin Shlita Shemei Ashnas Tavshin Nun Vav. Dr. Halperin, Rabbi Dr. Halperin, has informed me that since the year 1996, Chog Zichuyot HaCholed, the law of the rights of the patient, Koveya Ki Ein Chova L'Aseis Haskama B'Ktav B'Shabbat. He says, the law now says, there is no requirement of giving consent in writing on Shabbos. Ela Shemutur L'Histapek B'Haskama B'Alpeh. It's sufficient to just give verbal consent. Shetitva'ed Me'ucha Yoter. And afterwards you'll do a document to formalize it. But it'll be attested to later. That's interesting. Number 11 doesn't really follow from number 10. I feel like he really went out of order, and I don't know why he did it. I just actually want to take a look in my edition here. I wonder if he switched it. No, he kept the order as is. Okay. So number 11 is a different point, but number 12 is going to come back to documentation. Number 11 is Nituach B'Motza'ei Shabbat, preparing for surgery for after Shabbos. Someone's going to have surgery after Shabbos. So the question is, what are they allowed to do on Shabbos? Not dealing with somebody who's in a life and death case and they need the surgery right after Shabbos and therefore they have to do prep now. We're not talking about that. Cholesh she'ein bo sakana. Somebody who is ill, but not dangerously so. Hatzarech lavor nituach v'motzei Shabbat, and he's going to need some kind of surgery after Shabbos is over. So normally, cholesh she'ein bo sakana, you can do a derabbanan with a shinoi. You could ask a non-Jew to do something. But what are you going to do here to prepare for the surgery that's after Shabbos? So he says, shamati mimor v'rabi agon rav noiver chlita, shem yevsher lidchos es hanituach liyom acher. He says, I heard from Rav Neuvert that if you can't push off the surgery to another day, it could be that on Shabbos you would be allowed to do things that are derabbanans that are necessary to prepare for the surgery. Parentheses, kagon chokan nikui, which is an enema. So if he needs to clean out the system before he can have the surgery, he would be allowed to do that on Shabbos, perhaps, if he doesn't have the ability to move the surgery, even though he's not dangerously ill. And under the same guidelines, he would be allowed to fast if need be, in advance of the procedure. Yes, Dr. Felder.
That was actually a question I was going to have about fasting in preparation. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, great. So that's this little side note about preparing for the surgery for after Shabbos. I had someone once tell me that they had to have a colonoscopy on Sunday morning and that they were doing the cleansing stuff on Shabbos. I didn't think that was right. Unless you're talking about somebody who needs to have it then because there's something urgent that has to be investigated. But I don't think that was the case. I think it was a routine thing. I would not think that appropriate. Okay. Number 13. Number 12. Back to our documentation. Michtav Shichrur, discharge papers. Want to avoid having to pay for the extra day in the hospital. So, Chole HaMishtachrer B'Shabbat, a patient who is being released on Shabbos, Acharei Tipul B'Cheder Miyun B'Machlaka, after ER treatment or after treatment in a unit, Asur lo levakeh sheyichtivu lo b'Shabbos mechtav shichrur. So he's not allowed to ask them to write up discharge papers for him with instructions and whatever. V'ima mishtachrer dino k'chol she'en bo sakana. However, if the person being discharged is chol she'en bo sakana, they're ill, just not dangerously so, v'zakuk l'tipul nosaf b'Shabbat, and they need care on Shabbos, so now chol she'en bo sakana, you can ask a non-Jew to do d'oraisa. You can ask a non-Jew to write. So muter levakish me'akum sheyichtov as hamichtav omir sham letrufod. You can ask the non-Jew to write whatever letter, whatever prescription is necessary. Clear? V'hu adin, and the same thing is true, em yitzarech letipul b'motzai Shabbos. If he will need care right after Shabbos. But he won't be able to get the document after Shabbos. That's not going to be an option. The doctor who would write it isn't present. Or because the need, because he needs to get this letter, the result is that his treatment is delayed. We're not going to make him do that. He's able to ask a non-Jew to be the one to write out the prescription. Clear? Okay. One more. Number 13. Chazarat chole habaita. For a patient to go home on Shabbos. I had this case this past Shabbos, Friday night. Somebody needed to be in the hospital from before Shabbos into Friday night. They knew they were going to get discharged Friday night. So the question was, what are they able to do? So chole she'ein bo sakana hamishtachver b'Shabbos. Kanal. He says, if you have a patient who is ill but not dangerously so, who's going to be sent home on Shabbos, the eino yachol, flip the page, la'agia lebeiso b'kachot atzmo, he's not able to get home under his own power, al lo lachzor habaita b'mechonit asher Yehudi noheg ba. He should not go home in a car driven by a Jew. Avol muter lo lachzor b'mechonit shenoheg ba'akum. He will be allowed to go home in a car driven by a non-Jew. Assuming he doesn't have the option of staying in the hospital till after Shabbos and having whatever needs met there. This is a major issue. You have to make sure that the house is inside of Tchum Shabbos. I'm going to come back to that. Just want to finish the line first. He should ask the non-Jew to take any belongings, to take the discharge document, to take whatever prescription he has for medications he's going to need. Let the non-Jew be the one to carry it. And what he's talking about here are a couple of different things. One issue is the problem of carrying. You're outside the Eruv. So therefore, you want the non-Jew to be the one to do the carrying. The other is the issue of Tchum Shabbos, the boundary beyond which you're not allowed to travel on Shabbos outside of town. Now here, it's really, really important to know that what people are used to thinking of as Tchum Shabbos is not actually necessarily the measurement we use. We usually say Tchum Shabbos is how long? How far? What's the distance?
2,000 amos.
2,000 amos, right? 2,000 amos. Roughly a kilometer. That's what we usually say. But surprise, that's not actually necessarily the case. Look at footnote 90 on the bottom of the page in the Nishmas Avram. He references you to a passage in the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa, but then he writes, Veshamati memori v'rabi agon Rabbi Yeshua Neuwirth. I heard from my Rebbe Rav Neuwirth, author of the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. Shekavanaso lefachos meyud beis mil. He does not mean 2,000 amos. He means 12 mil, 24,000 amos, which he tells you in parentheses is about 11 kilometers or 7 miles. That's the distance. Ki az yeshno safek iser de oraisa avura yehudi v'lo mo'il shanahag hu akum. Because if it's outside of that, now you have the possibility that this is an iser de oraisa, a biblical prohibition for the Jew. In which case, I don't care that you have a non-Jew who's doing the driving, you're still in violation. Here's what he's talking about. I brought you sources on the sheet for it, but there's no time to go through it. So I'm just going to explain it outside. The Rambam writes in what I brought you in Source Yud Beis, in his Mishnah Torah, he says that the boundary for Tchum Shabbos is 24,000 amos biblically, 2,000 amos rabbinically. That's what he writes in Mishnah Torah. This is actually controversial for reasons we're not really going to get into, but just pointing out, the Rambam in Source Yud Gimel in his Sefer HaMitzvos just says 2,000 amos. He doesn't bring you this distinction of the biblical versus the rabbinic. It's not even there. So the Ramban on the Sefer HaMitzvos notes that from the Babylonian Talmud, from the Talmud Bavli, it seems like all of Tchum is rabbinic. The whole thing is rabbinic. There's no issue of a deoraisa at all. And that gets brought in the Sefer HaChinuch. So in other words, I have an apparent text that seems to say 2,000 amos is biblical. I have a solid text in the Rambam saying 24,000 amos is biblical. And then I have Ramban, who says, nonsense, Tchum is a derabanan in the Bavli. Yerushalmi doesn't agree, but the Bavli says it's a derabanan. So in the event that Tchum is only a derabanan, the Chol she'ein bo sakana is able to go beyond the Tchum and be okay. But once you enter the possibility that it's possibly a deoraisa, we would really like to avoid this patient doing that. If it's a need, now we're in, you know, sakana danger territory, that's a different story. But otherwise, we would want to avoid that. So if it's more than 24,000 amos outside of a town, more than 11 kilometers outside of town, there's a gap that big between one town and the next, then we would have an issue. Not such an issue where I am on Long Island. It's pretty hard to find that kind of a distance between towns that's that doesn't have houses. Toronto, maybe Toronto to Mississauga, you could end up with gaps like that. Within Toronto, you certainly don't have any gaps like that. I can't think of a route that you would take. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look at the map. But that's a consideration that one might have. Okay, thank you very much. Next time, it looks like we have televisions, electric doors, escalators, having a Sefer Torah or Sfarim on the bed of the patient, death certificates, all sorts of interesting stuff. We're getting towards the end of his introduction, believe it or not. I didn't know when we would finish that. Maybe 2 weeks, we'll see. All right. Thank you very much.
Tina, yeah. I have one question.
Sure.
I'm sorry, it's Atina. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
I thought that I was under the impression that staying in a hospital is really not a healthy place for anybody. So wouldn't it be considered a sakana to stay in the hospital longer than necessary?
Right. So that's a good question. And I think very subjective. Meaning, it would depend on, this is a medical evaluation rather than a halachic one. It would depend on a medical opinion on the vulnerability of this patient, the state of things in the hospital at that point, as well as the question of where they're going to stay. Meaning, I don't know whether the same concerns apply. Let's say there's a Shabbos room in the hospital. I don't know if the same concerns apply in the lobby of the hospital. I'm not debating or disagreeing with what you're saying. I'm saying that I would want a medical opinion.
Assuming he's leaving the hospital.
Sorry?
Assuming he's leaving the hospital premises.
No, but I'm saying in terms of staying in the hospital, I don't know without asking, a medical opinion what the level of risk is. It could be that by default the answer is it's too risky. I don't know. I don't know if any of the doctors here want to weigh in. I'm not clear on the level of risk involved. Dr. Schwartz, you're unmuted. Dr. Felder, unmuted. Yeah. Go ahead.
I've never seen anything quoted sort of quantitatively. More anecdotally, it seems like a dangerous place to be. Stay long enough, you'll catch something. But I've never seen it more detailed than that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the true answer is it probably depends. It depends how sick the person is, and it depends the incremental risk of one more day in the hospital.
Right.
But I don't know if you can, like Michael, I don't know if you can quantify that.
Right. The way you would quantify it is this. Shlomo Zalman Orbach, when he defines sakana, safek pikuach nefesh, says anything that people would avoid, that random, like normal people would avoid viewing it as being a threat to life, is what we consider to be safek pikuach nefesh. If there's MERS going around and you have somebody with a vulnerability and you're going to tell me that even being in the lobby, you're at risk of catching it, then get out of there. I think I don't have enough information.
Or an emergency department where you don't have a bathroom.
Well, that's a Kavod HaBrios issue, potentially. That's a different problem. All right.